couple decades. My respect and love and admiration for him has grown and grown. And I'm going to try to introduce him to you this morning. I'll consider that my job. There's a shot of him in his younger days. He's known as a man of peace. If he had been here this morning, he'd have been called back in order to make peace in a village that is about to break out with their own little war. He once was a powerful shaman, and Indians get a new exciting name every time they do something new and exciting. So he's got a lot of names. He's been called, he's got a tongue. He's been called No Trouble for being a decent fellow. The name he uses now, his Christian name is Batista. His official name is Batista Kahikua. Kahikua means shoefoot. So I will call him by three different names, Shoefoot, Batista, and B, as a short for B. He's known all over Yanomama land now as the one who fights for peace. This is a very un-Yanomama thing to do, to fight for peace. Doesn't use a club to do it. He just tries to make peace everywhere he can. My original working title for the book was one of his names. My favorite name for him, a name in my view which summarizes better than any other name what it means to be redeemed. And that name was Doesn't Grab Women. Now, I don't blame you for laughing. I see the professor here laughing away, and this name never made it through the editorial process because my wife said, there's no way I'm going to go into any store and ask some kid to find me the book Doesn't Grab Women. But it betrays more than anything else what this discussion is about. He went to a village, and he was not just no trouble, but he didn't do what normal Yanomama men do. Now, if any of you are faint of heart, don't get Spirit of the Rainforest and read it. I used to have a warning in the front of the book, and I got an angry call from somebody once who said, I thought that warning was just there to bait me, but this book is disgusting. When we did a second edition, we realized that it really wasn't a classy thing to do to have a warning like that in the front of a book. So we considered taking it out, and I didn't know what to do. So I asked Shoefoot what to do, and he said, nobody warned me when I came along. To tell you about Shoefoot's life and to relate it to you where you are, I really just want to talk about one word. I'll talk about it in this session. I'll talk about it in the workshop. And the word is deception. Once you understand this word, you've got our enemy pegged. This is all that he's about, deception. Now, I'm going to show you a commercial, not because I really love the commercial, but because it works on deception. It's actually a disgusting commercial. I'm shocked that it got by all the editors, but it's kind of fun to watch, and it demonstrates the whole issue.
Deception is fractured fibula, given mild sedative. It's like you'd be able to go home tomorrow.
Daddy's going to be so excited.
That killed him.
Paging Dr. Palmer, Dr. Barbara Palmer, dial 452.
Now, for those of you who are troubled by that, the job of our enemy is to screw everything up. If he can't outright deceive us, he's going to make things look so confusing that reality is a mess, a straight-out mess. Theologian Paul Tillich came to the end of his life and finally concluded that there was a devil. It's amazing how much reality a person might come to at the end of his life from entering that phase. Things are starting to look different. You're looking at your life in terms of how much is left. And he could not explain the quantity of evil in the world and in people without coming to believe in a devil. An amazing thing, actually, for a liberal theologian to believe a thing like that. C.S. Lewis said, there are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devil. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. While I'm talking about C.S. Lewis, I'll just mention, I have two books. Both of them are spiritual journeys. One's my spiritual journey. The other one is Jungle Man and Shoefoot's spiritual journey. And I have some leftover Screwtape letters, which if you buy both of my books, I'll throw in a Screwtape letters for you. But I have to also add, if you want to hear Screwtape on tape, John Cleese, the guy from Fawlty Towers, you know, the British comedian, if you want to hear Screwtape in a British voice, I have a few of those left. I did a kind of an apologetic offering, a Christmas offering a number of years ago, where we offered a number of my books and some C.S. Lewis books, and we offered this tape. There's only a few left, but to hear John Cleese doing Screwtape, converting into a worm, is exciting enough in itself. Shoefoot and I have a sort of a lifelong debate on this particular topic right here that Lewis is discussing. I believe that Shoefoot is far too close to the side of disbelieving in their existence and ignoring them entirely. And Shoefoot believes that I'm far too close to feeling an excessive and unhealthy interest in them, because I'm always trying to get him to tell me more about the enemy, and he doesn't want to talk about them. That's why I mentioned to Dan, if Shoefoot sent one of his people to teach us about demonism, I'm telling you, they wouldn't know much about it, because Shoefoot has not been willing to talk very much about it. And he's repeatedly asked me, why do you want to know about this? Why do you want to know about that? You're getting into territories that... So we have this continuing debate, but he is a special person, and I'm going to try to introduce him to you. In fact, I'll even add that Don Shire's son, Andy Shire, was able to get him out in the jungle all by himself and put a camera on him and get him talking. And I'll show you some of the clips from that, but Don's got it available for you. A spirit came forward, stood before the Lord and said, I will entice him. By what means? The Lord asked. I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets, he said. You will succeed in enticing him, said the Lord. Go and do it. Now, I'll discuss this a little more detail in the workshop, but classic case in which God is having a dialogue with some spirits. The theological community is divided on who these spirits really are. I'll get into that later. I don't want to go into that right now. But we know in Job, God had a lengthy conversation with Satan and a showdown and so forth. In this particular case, he's sending out a spirit to deceive all these phony prophets. It's amazing. Your job, those of you who work with clients, counselors, anyone you're counseling with, is to get them to see where they've been deceived. And they have been deceived. Not that they're necessarily liars. They just deceive themselves about reality. Mark Twain said, a good lie will travel twice around the globe before the truth gets its boots on. Now, in my modern parlance, I say, a good lie will get you a $1 million bonus. And the truth is on the unemployment line. And maybe you're familiar with this particular issue. Do you know who said, remember the truth, it's all that matters? James Fry. He wrote 1 million pieces. And I wish I had the clips from it, but I didn't have my recording going when he did the interview with Oprah Winfrey, in which she said, well, that's a lie, isn't it? He said, his defense was, no, all the characters in my book were real characters. The fact that they didn't do what he said they did is beside the point. They had a wonderful mea culpa. His publisher was there, sold millions of copies, as you know. Of course, any of us authors are jealous of all that. The fact that it wasn't true is beside the point, and I never heard anybody mention anything about giving any of the money back. Now, the lies that have surfaced just in the wake of 9/11 have caused me to do a new edition of God in the Pits, which I call the Enron Jihad Edition. I'm not going to go into all the lies, but the quantity of lies around 9/11, the quantity of lies around Enron, the quantity of lies that run around is shocking. I'll just give you a couple of them here. Jihad can be simply an inner struggle against candy. That was said by a mullah. But the punchline is that it was said from the platform of a famous church. Ouch. Biggest lie about 9/11? On the streets of Karachi, anyone will tell you the obvious truth. The Jews did it. Now, when you see this sort of thing, you've got to know that there's a deceiver who is rubbing his hands with glee. So when I start telling you about some of the details of Shoefoot's life, you're going to get the picture. Same deceiver running with him is messing with us. Here's a classic, interesting lie. You can't know anything for certain. In a good lie, you never actually see the lie. The real lies hidden behind the statement. We like to call our politicians liars and so forth. Our politicians aren't very good liars. A good lie has got the lie behind it. In this particular case, the lie is uncertain. Probably the guy telling it never even recognizes it. I'm certain that you can't know anything for certain.
Legendary Holy Grail.
Here's one, another one.
And according to the Da Vinci Code, its absence is no mistake. It's just another clue leading us to the truth about Mary Magdalene.
This, for Dan Brown, is basically a dinner in which you see Jesus and his wife, Mary Magdalene.
The book says the painting literally spells it out. First, there's that M, which could stand for Magdalene or marriage.
I'm getting to Shoefoot in a minute, but I want to prime the pump. Because you're going to say, how could he be so duped? How could he be so fooled? Look at us. Look at us. You want to see that M? Can you see it there? Now, this is Da Vinci passing truth on to us. Here it comes, right there by John. I'm sure you'd like to see it again, but, you know, this sent me to my dictionary to see, possibly, what could he? I found there were a lot of words. There were a lot of them. I think there were thousands of them. This is a very famous book by a very famous anthropologist. And he says, in general, the Yanomama and many tribal peoples who subsist on hunting and gathering or slash and burn agriculture achieve an adequate, if not an abundant, subsistence with very few hours of work a day. There is no reason why anybody should not believe that statement. In fact, Don conned me into going to Yanomama land in 1982. When I came back from that trip, I had a conversation with one of the leaders in my church. I was telling them about how poor the people were and how we were trying to do something to help them and whatever we were doing. And his comment, he was a well-educated, a teacher in the public school system, historian, and he said, "Why are you down there bothering those people?" The reason he had that attitude is because there is a broad expectation that people who live in the jungle survive on a couple hours of work a day. In fact, one university where we were presenting, I was back at the book table, and a gal there said to me, she said, "Don't you know that such and such a tribe could get all they needed with 1 week of work per month?" I didn't want to debate her. I didn't want to say, "Are they extinct?" Which I think is a reasonable question to ask. But I just said to her, "Would you like to know how Timoteo," this is Shoefoot's nephew, "would answer that question?" I said, "Shagnon says they can get by with a few hours of work a day. Would you like to know how he would answer that question?" And she thought for a minute, and she said, "No." And I said, "Well, I'm curious myself. I'd like to know myself how he would answer the question." So I raised my hand. We were in the question and answer period. I raised my hand. I asked the question. By the time I got the question asked, and the translator got translated to Timoteo, and Timoteo started the answer, she was gone. Didn't want to hear it. I'm going to play Shoefoot's answer to this question, because this is, in my view, the most contemptible piece of deception I have ever seen in print. Looks pretty innocuous to you, I understand. But when you communicate to a civilized, wealthy culture that people who are destitute, starving, and can't feed themselves are getting by fine on a couple hours of work a day, I've made this point. Every Yanomama I make the point to, Harry, I'll introduce to you later, is sitting on his hammock and he looks around in the jungle. He says, "All these people in your country who say it's so nice down here," he says, "where are they? I've never seen one of them." And the reason he hasn't seen one of them is not because the jungle is so big. None of them are there. I apologize for the audio, but did you catch that? Okay. He's saying, why would a man who's lived among my people lie to your people? The village he comes from is at war. They can't feed themselves. Even if they could work 2 hours a day, they can't because they're at war. Let me try his nephew, Timoteo. I think you'll be able to understand this a little clearer.
I hear that your people often go hunting, but you don't go because you're hungry. You go for fun. I've seen people catch fish and throw them back in. If you don't kill anything, you don't care. If a Yanomama goes hunting and fishing and doesn't get anything that day, our children will go to bed hungry. A life of survival in the jungle is constant work. Since I've been here, I've seen that you don't think about food. You can say no to what you don't want to eat. A Yanomama doesn't know what he will eat tomorrow. He will only eat whatever he can hunt or catch. He never says, I don't want to eat that. He eats whatever is there. The Yanomama, especially children, know what it's like to go for days hungry. Growing crops in the jungle is very hard work.
Actually, in Shagnon's case, I don't understand it, because Shagnon prides himself in having accurately communicated the Yanomama and taken a lot of heat for doing so. I'll come to that in a minute, but first, let me just give you a little quick visual introduction. When Don and I first went, we flew over hours of this kind of thing, interrupted only occasionally by a scenic river like this, and even far more rarely. Don, I'm not even sure you've ever seen this picture. You've got to go a long ways to find a village, an actual Yanomama village, to fly over. Can you see that clearly? I can't see it real clearly from here. Just a closer view of it there. And then, of course, we have our escort, who's, you can see, on guard there, making sure that nothing ever happens of danger. Once in a while, we'll go portage over a spot or two like this. Now, I have to tell you just a quick fishing story. My Indian buddies took me fishing. I tell my friends in the commodity pit this when I got back, and we caught a fish this big. And they say, boy, you're sure not an exaggerator. What's the bragging point about that? Well, again, you got to do your best to try to get fit into the culture in which we're dealing with. In Yanomama land, they measure a fish across the head. And this is me trying to demonstrate my bragging rights for the camera. And I finally gave up and got my buddies to hold it up so I could take a picture. And I don't think I'm exaggerating too much. I'm not sure exactly. Right. Shoefoot grew up in a house that looks like this. It's called a shabanal. I finally found some pictures of it that I can show you. It's a big, round, leaning wall. And they hang their hammocks under it. If it's a large village, 300 or 400, it might be almost the size of a football field. Most of them are maybe about the size of this room. I'll give you sort of a panoramic view. Very difficult to take a picture of. In fact, in this picture, if you look very closely, there is a Yanomama warrior in this picture. I don't know if you can see him. He's right in the middle. I'll show you a picture of him, though. I had not anticipated we would have young children in this audience, but so you can avert your eyes if you like. But this is a picture of this warrior. Actually, we did a life-size picture cutout of this warrior. I'll go on from that in case that's offensive. And we took a G-string and put it around the actual waist of the cardboard cutout and put a little cloth flap over that for students and people coming through to check us out. What we found real curious was the quantity of people, generally speaking females, who could not resist the temptation to come along and lift up that flap. It almost got to be a joke. You know, anytime anybody walked by, we'd be looking to see if they would pick up that flap. Maybe we were acting as a tempter for them. The big debate on the Yanomama people. This is the original book written by Napoleon Shagnon called The Yanomama, the Fierce People. Is too fierce or not too fierce? That's the question. My apologies to Shakespeare, but it is the question. It is the question. This is the book that he wrote starting in the 60s, in the 70s. It's the best-selling anthropological book of all time. There's no close second to it. I think I need to update this. Well over a million copies. The prof here will know. I may be over 1.5 million by now. I'm not sure. under pressure from the anthropological community, he took off the subtitle of The Fierce People. And then under more pressure from publishers and other folks, he came out with a popular version, which was called Yanomama, The Last Days of Eden. Now, Chagnon and I, from the time my book first came out, became, I would say, civil but harsh enemies, but with good lines of communication. When I saw this book come out, I called him up. This was too much. I said, what in the world? That is the most disgusting subtitle I've ever seen on a book. You know what he said to me? He said, Mark, he said, you're an author. He says, you know, we don't get the rights to the title of our book. I know this. I do happen to know. Did you know this? The publisher gets everything on the cover and everything in the flaps. The author gets everything inside. I said, yeah, I do know that, but that's no excuse for a subtitle like that. And he said, well, it's true. It's, I said, that's not my title. I get off the phone with him, and I said to myself, what a crock. This guy is reputed. He lives in Michigan, but he taught in California. He's reputed to have gone to bars in San Francisco. I don't know if you know if this is true, Pa. And started fights just to get warmed up to go to the Yanomama. That's how tough those people are. And he's going to tell me that a publisher conned him out of a title? So I'm saying, what kind of a, you know, what does he take me for? Well, I picked up the book and I started to read a little bit. Now, how many of you have ever seen a book in which the author trashes his title in the preface to his book? That's exactly what Chagnon did. He wasn't conning me at all. It wasn't his title. He trashes his subtitle in the preface to his book. He says, anthropologists admit that violence occurs in the tribal world, but think that we should not talk about it, saying, even if they are that way, we do not want others to know about it. It'll give them the wrong impression. He's saying right here, this is not some fly-by-night Christian anthropologist at a podunk college someplace. This is the best-selling anthropological writer of all time. I believe his name will surpass Margaret Mead eventually. And he's saying there's a conspiracy to keep the quiet about the violence. The wrong impression of what? On hearing Darwin's theory that man was descended from the apes, the bishop's wife is reputed to have said, good Lord, let's hope it isn't true, but if it is true, let's hope that others don't learn about it. I need to give you a minute to absorb this. That the leading anthropologist in the world today is saying, my discipline is as closed-minded and bigoted as those right-wing Christians who don't want anybody to learn about evolution. In the preface to his book, because of this title, The Last Days of Eden, and he writes, there is a definite bias in cultural anthropology favoring descriptions of tribal peoples that characterize them as hapless, hopeless, harmless, homeless, and helpless. And the fact of the matter is they're starving to death and going extinct. Remember I started out with deception? I just wanted to put this image over the whole thing before we start getting into the details of Shoefoot's life. One of the things that has made Chagnon so famous, you saw a shaman there dancing to his spirits, is that he crossed paths with a missionary. Missionary was saying, hey, there's a better spirit. Shoefoot's going to tell you about him in a little bit. And the shaman came to Professor Chagnon. Actually, he wasn't a professor at that time. He was doing his doctoral dissertation. And he said, the missionary tells us that we have to throw our spirits away, or God's going to destroy this world with fire. And Chagnon, if we continue to dance to our spirits, and Napoleon Chagnon says, that's not true. I'll prove it to you that it's not true. I'll come and dance the spirits myself. And this is a picture of Rehoboam, his name is Runner, who is administering a drug to the professor's nostrils to help him in getting contact with the spirits. Drugs and spirit contact go hand in hand. And Napoleon Chagnon writes in his book about this experience. Actually, that book is out of print, and I do not know why this story has not been reprinted in later editions, probably because it went out of style for anthropologists to take drugs and dance to spirits. That's all my only guess. However, if you get a couple of my books, I have reprinted his detailing of this in his second edition, which I'll throw in for no charge, and since it's out of print, it's okay to copy it. And he writes graphically about this encounter in the spirit world. He actually names three spirits, Feriferiwa, Periboriwa, and Lahakanaliwa, and I'm going to ask Shoefoot to tell you a little bit about it, a little bit about these spirits right now, because he claims that these spirits came and lived in his chest. He invited spirits to come and dwell in his chest while he was dancing around, a conversion experience. I even asked him about this. I said, well, that sounds exactly like becoming a believer. He said, yeah, it was. You know, the spirits came and dwelled in his chest. He said, I was a Christian, and one time I had Jesus in my chest, and now I got these spirits in here. He's an open fellow. He's not afraid to discuss these issues.
Well, Betty Bordiou, he is one of the spirits that we call child eater. Because when a shaman gets that spirit, and there's many of them, when he gets that spirit, he becomes a killer of children. Those are caring leaders down here. And just like that, their spirit, buzzard spirit, is an eater of filthies.
Now I think we can talk about the other.
We have to realize that there are many rank and file spirits as well. Spirits that we just call Guabra. It means they're just there. There are many, many, many of them. And that's what Fedefeiriva is. He's one of the rank and file. And he does bring chills and in the rain and different stuff like that. But he really is a very inconsequential spirit as far as we're concerned. And remember, in these rank and file ones, there are many, many ones that we just call the Guabra.
Just as an aside, he used to call them rank and file. It just means run-of-the-mill spirits. There's lots of them. When he saw the book, which I sent him on Pokemon, detailing all the identities of Pokemon, he recognized all the spirits. In fact, he could even tell you about them without reading about them. You know, this one's gregarious and so forth. But these are inconsequential spirits. But the next spirit, Lahakanaliwa, is a fierce spirit.
Now, Lahakananiwa, on the other hand, he's a man killer. When he comes, when you get him, you begin to become a hunter of men. You go out with him, you become a violent person, you have only a desire to kill people. Buzzard spirit, on the other hand, is only an eater of disease, an eater of dirt, an eater of filthy diseases.
Now, Napoleon Chagnon said he had these three spirits came into his chest. That's the goal of a shaman, get the spirits in your chest. And he said, wild things passed through my mind. We communed with spirits. We shared something undefinable between us. A freedom to create with our minds the mystical universe that began with the beginning of time. He recalled, while he's doing this, Lévi-Strauss' argument about human logic found in primitive cultures because it's uncontaminated. And, he wrote, it seemed like a wonderful idea to him while he's in this seance, drug-induced state. In fact, I read all these descriptions back to Cal Boa, the shaman who administered this whole time. And Cal Boa's reaction was, that's exactly the way it was. In fact, he said, Cal Boa, fascinating person, he said, he had to have written that himself. He couldn't have had that written by anybody else. He had to have been there, because that's exactly what it was like. In the workshop, maybe I'll talk about Lévi-Strauss. Oh, I'm going to mention it right now because it sizzles my soul a little. Claude Lévi-Strauss, anthropologist who left France, is a Frenchman. While my father was in a foxhole in Germany, Claude Lévi-Strauss left France and was studying in New York, working out this theory about how primitive peoples are uncontaminated by civilization, so the wisdom of the universe is somehow with them. Now, if you think I'm overreacting, Claude Lévi-Strauss was Jewish. That's where he spent World War II. He also heard the initial strains of Richard Strauss, also Sprach Zarathustra. Also Sprach Zarathustra is the opera that Strauss wrote on Nietzsche's Thus Spake Zarathustra, in which Nietzsche works out a theory that if you might as well worship something, you can worship a donkey. Isn't it interesting that here he is dancing to spirits, animal spirits, and he hears the strains of an opera in which Nietzsche spun out these wildly but very consistent with all demonology theories. Now, there does occur at this point an exchange between him and the missionary, in which he flips the missionary the bird, and the missionary returns him what he calls an equivalent insult in Yanomama. The guy who administered this thing, his name is Cal Boa, that's him on the cover of the book. After the exchange of insults, Shagnon says, the others resumed their chanting, confident that if I didn't think Dios would destroy me with fire for chanting to the Hecuta, they shouldn't be too concerned either. For was I not myself a refugee from Dios Iuritari, and therefore knowledgeable of the machinations of Dios and the limitations on his power to destroy men with fire? I was fascinated enough about this story to go meet Cal Boa. That's Cal Boa today. Cal Boa, I spent a couple of days talking with Cal Boa, and about every hour, Cal Boa would turn to me again and say, I want you to tell me why that white guy deceived me about the spirits. He said, if I had gone a different way at that time, my life would be completely different. He said, all my arrows are gone. That means his children. I have nothing left. Nothing. And he kept saying, it's all because he deceived me about spirits. I finally got tired of hearing this. I said to Cal Boa, I said, how can you tell me he deceived you about the spirits? You're the spirit guy. The only spirits he got came from you. Now, you'll hear in a minute where Batista will talk about spirits that a person gets, that they're the other shaman spirits. These were your spirits. He couldn't have deceived. I said, nobody in my country is going to believe he deceived you about the spirits. You're the spirit pro. And he said to me, he said, that's right. He said, I had all our spirits, but he told me he knew about the greatest spirit. And now I know he never did. After 20 years, actually it was more than that, 30 years, after 30 years, Cal Boa still knew the very word that the missionary used to insult the anthropologist. Now, I have an anthropologist sitting down here in the front row. I have to say, before I even show this next slide, some of my best friends are anthropologists. This fellow came out with a book, and this is one of his lines in a book. Richie is a Christian evangelical who's not sympathetic to homosexuality or anthropology. This writer lacks accuracy. Let me just put it that way, I guess is the only right way to put it. I've never said anything in opposition to the field of anthropology, and I've never said anything in favor of sodomy, just for the record, okay? This book has got such scandalous charges against Napoleon Chagnon that my book's almost been ignored by comparison. And it's almost, it actually has forced me to come to the defense of my bitter academic enemy, Napoleon Chagnon, because the charges in it are so scurrilous. Listened to a prof from Harvard lecture on this book, and he spent the first 20 minutes talking about how inaccurate and bad the book was, and then spent the last part of his lecture talking about how we should pay so much attention to it. Some other anthropologists, it's amazing how academics can get their cockles ruffled, and I'll talk about this a little bit in the workshop. People who would speak to you normally in a very civil way, as Chagnon has always spoken to me, but boy, they get upset about something, they come up with different ways of describing it. This is one anthropologist's review of Spirit of the Rainforest. Just have no ability to pull any punches at all.
Many Western diseases have been introduced in the Amazon region.
This is shaman.
The Yanomami have little or no resistance to them. They consider shamanism their only defense. They believe all disease is caused by spirits and can be cured only by controlling the powers of the spirits. Here, the shamans draw the sickness up through the patient and then cast it out to the ground. Evil spirits are sent by their enemies. Hisue searches in the dust for the tracks left behind by enemy shamans, evidence of witchcraft by hostile Yanomami communities. He finds the path of the shaman Hayoroma.
Hayoroma! Hayoroma!
Hisue is taken over now by one of the rainbow demons. It allows him to make a diagnosis.
There is a very hard lump inside me. Cut it up. Cut it away.
He and the other men try to kill the evil spirit now in her body. Warfare is a way to redress wrongs in the spirit world just as it is in the material world.
I had for you. Chagnon described that as stimulating and exhilarating. That's shamanism. And the shaman, they mentioned war. You notice how respectful this documentary is of all their ways? It even talks about diseases coming from the outside community. Let me see if I can get back to slide I was trying to show.
Tarumi, a woman without a husband, has just given birth. She has no family ties here, so she has no one to take care of her during this time of crisis. Normally, her female relatives would attend to her.
Instead, her young daughter tries to help. The usual birth-related rituals are not being followed. Terumi, the mother, is sick, and her baby refuses to nurse. She is too ill to care for her newborn.
Now that, ladies and gentlemen, is award-winning cinematography. I tell you, Don and I have been filming in the jungle. We've never seen anything like this. But what you might be interested in knowing, again, remember, I'm talking about deception, is what goes on outside the camera lens. What goes on after the camera's turned off? What goes on before the camera's turned on? Timoteo, Shufoot's nephew, would like to address that particular issue right there.
This is another film of my people. This village was very sick with malaria when the film crew arrived. And my people got excited and happy and said, "Foreigners have come. We know that foreigners have good medicine against malaria. They'll be able to help us." And they went to the foreigners and said, "There are many sick. Can you give us medicine for malaria?" But they were told that we didn't have any medicine. But we Yanomami know that foreigners never come without bringing medicine. We believe that they just didn't want to give any medicine. They didn't help anyone the whole time they were there. They just kept filming. Many people died while they were there, and they filmed the burning of bodies. This woman that you saw and her baby, they both died while the film crew was still there. But one of the things as a child that makes me angry to this day is that their camera broke while they were there, and they took off real fast to the outside world, got another camera, and came right back and continued to film. Sickness and death and cremation and grief. They said only 4 died. 8 died while they were there, and they never helped. And still today we ask, why didn't they help? That's why I can say to you, I believe that they don't want change for the Yanomami, because they want to continue to study us and film us and use my people.
I've had college students come up to me after showing this and other clips like it, and just shaking their head saying, "I don't think I'll ever believe anything I see in print anymore, and you've destroyed my worldview, and I have to start over." I guess I think that's progress. I'm going to have to skip some of these slides, but in dealing with just deception, I was doing a lecture. I suddenly discovered, quite by accident, that the first 5 chapters of the book are all very intelligent lies. It's never beautiful where you aren't wanted. You're so brave. Not every spirit is what he appears. I'll skip ahead. I'm going to have to skip ahead for time, but we'll include some of this in the workshop. Spirits play a good spirit, bad spirit game. Oh, shoot, I've got to do this one. It's never beautiful where you aren't wanted. This is Shufoot. This is from I'll Never Go Back, the video that Don Shire's son did, where he got him off in the woods and got a lot of information that I haven't heard.
That they're talking about Yaiwana Nabalewa, the supreme being, the final one, that lives up there in that beautiful land with the Iboshikoli. I guess you would call them angels. And they're up there in this place that's so beautiful, that the sea is so clear that you can see right down through it.
They actually have seen the Yaipata's land. Shufoot said to me, "I didn't need a missionary to come tell me about heaven. He's actually seen it. A Yaipata is a center and source of light. Noisy beings crowd around him. There's a body of water clear as glass. Life-giving properties of the water and the fruit." I see what this equipment.
But then above that heaven is the real heaven, where this Yaiwana Navalewa lives. And up there it's just beautiful. There's a crystal water, just a clear, clear sea up there. And this supreme being, this Yaiwana Navalewa, lives up there with the Yaboshikoli, and they're looking down through the bottom of this lake. It is so clear that they can look right down through it and see the spirits of the dead.
I'm just going to run a number that he
is the final authority. And up in his land, he lives up there with the Yabo Shikoli, and they're very, very noisy. Just all the time, noisy, noisy.
One of the things we'll talk about in the workshop is people who have a knowledge of something that they shouldn't have. In Revelation 19:1, it talks about beings around the throne, always making noise and praise to God. I'll skip
but we said they just talked in gibberish, that they were just so noisy, noisy. That's the... We figured out later he was trying to say Shobali, the word for hell. But he said Shibali, which is our word for stingray. And he kept telling me in the heaven there's no Shibali, there's no stingrays. So I didn't really...
Oh, I'm sorry, I hit the wrong button. You missed that. In any case, the point is there's no stingrays in heaven. One thing that's interesting, as you read, if you read Spirit of the Rainforest, you'll see Jungle Man spent his whole life trying to figure this stuff out, whereas Shoefoot became a believer early on. Faith, it just reminds me of that verse, faith comes by hearing. He kept listening to this stuff. Hey, okay, there's stingrays in heaven, but he kept on, whereas Jungle Man, just the opposite. And you'll see people the same way. They either want to hear or they don't want to hear. I don't have time to go into some of these others. I want to skip straight on ahead to... this is a fascinating one, the whole issue of the... I'll have one clip about Hawashi spirit. Hawashi spirit, the spirits play good spirit, bad spirit. Not every spirit is what he appears. Look out for the Hawashi spirit. Just another incredible game. Another working title I had was Victim of Delusion. It's amazing just how deluded people can become.
We were especially forbidden to get the spirit of the Hawashi Liwa, of the Hawashi monkey, because it's a very mischievous monkey. And anybody who gets the spirit of that monkey just can't keep his hands off of other women.
You can imagine how divisive that might be in a village.
You'll see one being coming, and this spirit is the one that's going to be yours. And maybe there'll even be two spirits, but they're going to be yours, and they're going to come in there and start making the house. And at the end of this time, when these beings, when these spirits come, and they actually get inside your chest and begin to make their house there, then you are a shaman.
The goal of every shaman is to get so many spirits inside your chest, inside your shabana, I mean, in your chest, that no light can get in. In fact, when B has gone to other villages, the shamans will even look. They'll look right at his chest. They'll go, I can see your shabana there. It's empty. How did you get rid of your spirits?
There are many different classes of spirits. Some that live way up high in the rocks. Some that are the spirits of animals. And some that are just there. We just call them Kuab. But I began to lose control of my mind, and I couldn't control the sessions any longer. So my solution was to ask for more and more powerful dope to grind in more and more power to it. And even then, I still couldn't control what was happening in my mind.
Now this next one is when he actually talks, I think, about Joe Dawson, meeting Joe Dawson, seeing what it was like. In fact, incidentally, Joe Dawson was the one who swapped the insults with Napoleon Chagnon.
But his love for me was obvious, and he was not afraid to touch me. I understood what he was saying, and I've always wondered about that. I understood. Although there were other people talking to me who spoke better Yanomami, I, for some reason, could really understand him. And he told me, God loves you. That was just such an amazing concept to me, For some reason, I understood it perfectly, and the demons and the spirits, the Hecula, that were living in me, they were inside my chest. They just got terrified when he said that. They made my chest shake.
There's so much in this little clip. I'd like to break it up and talk about it. I don't have time. Maybe we'll do it in the workshop. Many of you know more about the magic of touch than I do. I'm not a touchy-feely person naturally, but Scripture actually says to lay hands on people. And he was impressed when Joe Dawson came along and touched him. Also scared to death of the spirit that Joe Dawson had in his chest.
But after that, I would go down out into the jungle by myself. There was a real quiet spot out there where there was a huge tree that had blown over. So I'd go up in that tree, and I would just sit there by myself and think. And I would try to talk to God myself.
I don't have time to tell you about introduce this next man to you because I want to skip on to the conclusion of Shoefoot, but another fascinating character. This is one guy who sat in his hammock, looked all around him, said, where are these people out there? Fascinating fellow, just like B himself, but he got tired of his wife and killed her. And then he said, when are these women going to learn that we aren't here for them, they're here for us? It's sad to me when I see academics saying, leave them alone, they're fine the way they are. And this is Shoefoot kind of giving the final chapter in his quest for truth.
I do want you to know that the battle that I was in, the battle for my soul, as I was praying this prayer, to the Great Spirit, I saw the chain of all of our evil spirits. He came running up to me. And he began to bind me in this cage. He rolled the cage around me. He bound me in a cage of He went back out into the jungle. He gathered incense. He came up to me. He grabbed my little box and began to dance with me. And he danced with me and he began to tell me, you're mine, I never let you go. He held incense to my nose and I began to give in to his power. And I began to think, well, this is what I find for. This is what I search for. This is the spirit that I've always had. And he began to dance with me. But I cried out to God anyway. I cried out to the spirit and I saw a blinding bright light. And I felt someone grab me away. And I said, get away from here. Leave me alone. It's mine.
Satan and the spirits within me fled, and I haven't been there. I have to just add as an aside, he'll tell anybody, don't go looking for this bright light. Don't go looking for this flashy stuff. But at that point, in his life, in his search for truth, he needed it. Now, for those of you who haven't been convinced of just how evil his life was, I showed you Harry who killed his wife. If you want your wife, you don't want to kill her, but you still have to keep her under control, there are ways to, well, I guess I better not even tell him. But it's horrible. It's horrible. There's too many females. Well, I'll mention just one. This one still is shocking me. I mentioned this to a class of anthropologists one time, and I don't get much audience feedback here because I can't see you too well, but I'm pretty fascinated by audience feedback, and you could not believe the difference the audience feedback I got. And the guys are just sitting there, kind of looking up at the roof, saying, well, I'm not sure. I figured that happened. I'm watching blood drain out of the girls' faces. And the line is that many a girl will have a baby before she has her first period. On Amazon, I saw this review of Spirit of the Rainforest. It said, the guy's name is Irregardless. I don't know if he knows that it's not a word or not, I don't. But anyway, he said, I was certainly bothered by this book. though not because of the graphic violence, but by the fact that this is really a Christian apology. Under the guise of speaking through a Yanomama shaman, now deceased, it presents a bleak view of constant suffering of the Amazonian tribe. Then whites, Nabas, bring Jesus to the jungle and everything becomes wonderful. While pretending to be an anthropology book, it is really an attempt to justify the intrusion of Christian missionaries into the lives of primitive people all over the globe. I'll say a few more things about that in the workshop, but I emailed Shoefoot and I said, why don't you respond to this? So Shoefoot did. He wrote a response. Shoefoot speaks to irregardless. Okay? Reviewer Shoefoot, dictated to Michael Dawson by Shoefoot, aging leader of Honey Village and so forth. Okay? And this is Shoefoot's response, and I put it on Amazon's website. Just like this, I'd like to ask Don Shire to read this, if he would, please. I'm going to translate it for you because it's priceless. Regardless, I'm called Shoefoot. With my brother-in-law and Mark, I worked on this book. It is truth, not lies. While we were suffering terribly, the Supreme Being sent his people to us. We learned of his love. Because of his love, we now love. We live in peace. We no longer are shooting each other. We are no longer stealing women. We are alive. They have many children. They are alive. You don't know anything about the Yanomama. You've never come here. Although we are dying out, that's okay, you say. Without seeing us, don't be lying about our condition. You are living well, so don't just want that for yourself and try to keep us suffering. Stop lying. That is showing your contempt for our suffering. You have no idea how we live. If you could come to my jungle, I would really discuss this with you, but you are far away. I believe if you could really see how my people suffer, you would not talk like this. So don't live your good life far away and talk about something you know nothing about. Just stay quiet over there. Although you are far away, don't try to make us angry. And if you ever come to my land, don't talk like this, because if the Yanomama hear you say this, they will fight you. If the ones that are dying out hear you talk like this, they are going to believe you are mocking us and get angry. Just keep your thoughts to yourself. I am a leader in my village. I am the one whose life has been changed. Now, remember, ladies and gentlemen, I started with this theme. Okay? If you go on Amazon today, you will find Irregardless's review, in which he says, I'm not bothered by the violence. I'm bothered by the intrusion. You know what you won't find? You won't find Shoefoot's response. It's been taken off. That's what I mean when I say deception. Because the truth is so harsh that when exposed to it, a guy who loves what he's about can't face it. We had a guy do a call in on a show one time, and Shoefoot spoke with him just like that. He said, you talk like you know a lot about us, but I don't think you've ever been to Yanomama land. And it's mockery to my people for you to talk like this. You know what the guy did? He called Shoefoot a token N-word right on the air in front of an African-American host. I was ashamed to be white. It's still about deception. We'll go into more of that in the workshop. A couple of months after they took his off, I rewrote it. It addresses Irregardless too much. I rewrote it, rephrased it. So if you go on there, you'll see a review from me, but it's really Shoefoot kind of rewritten. And it's still there. But my point is deception. Shoefoot was deceived. Jungle Man was deceived. We are being systematically deceived. Your job is to help people see not where they're lying to others, where they're lying to themselves. My time is up. Thanks, Dan.